It's Black Girls Laughing.
Black Girls Laughing. Giving you the dope takes with a wrist clap.
Yes. Dope takes on current events now with wrist claps.
Hey, y'all. What's up? What's good?
Alrighty. How you doing? Tell us, what's the origin of wrist clap?
I crashed my bike. I just got a bike. I crashed it turning. I don't know. My wheel started wobbling. It felt weird. It wobbled again. And when it wobbled again, I knew I was going to go down. Mm. I think it has to do with the street that I was on. It's pretty crappy as I was turning. But I went out. I hurt my hand. I don't think I broke anything, but it's pretty sore, it's pretty cut up, and it's pretty bruised. But we're hoping for full recovery. It's a lot better than it was, like, even looking at it now, at this very moment. It's a lot better. I don't have a huge, don't have to do a huge gauze patch and, like, a full flush out every time I change my bandages, so that's cool. And I can move my pinky almost at full capacity again, which is cool. But, you know, still a little sore. Still not 100%. Yeah, it's hard to do your hair with one hand. It's hard to do everything with one hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. I'm sorry. As someone that's had a limb not doing the things it's supposed to do, I feel you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but...
but...
I'm mostly okay. My bike is okay. No one had to go to the ER. I had a helmet on because I only ride with the helmet, and I happened to crash in front of a doctor in her scrubs on her way home who lived around the corner. So that's some sort of divine retribution or intervention. I'm going to take it as is. And there's a card in the mail going out, being sent to her, because I ended up having to take an Uber SUV home so I could get my bike and myself home, and realized I got her address that way. So I'm sending her a card because she was very, very nice, very, very thoughtful. And I had had two people pass me after I wiped out, and one of the girls just came up to me and said, "That sucks." And the other person didn't say anything. And she's the only one that stopped. And when she saw my hand, helped me and patched me up. And her brother-in-law even fixed my bike seat because it was crooked. And he straightened it back out. And they made sure I got home. So I got really, really lucky in that regard. And these are... I mean, she had told me she had just worked 12 hours, so, like, she was probably exhausted, didn't have to help me the way she did, and I'm really, really thankful for her and her kindness that she showed me.
That is part of, that's a nice story of, like, oh, I can have a little faith in humanity. Someone was nice. One out of three people are nice.
And, like, overwhelmingly nice.
Yeah.
Like, sent me home with, like, two bottles of water. Like, yeah. I actually feel myself getting a little emotional talking about it, because it really sucked wiping out. And to have someone come up to you and say, "That sucks," sucks really bad. And yeah. I was really annoyed that I was sitting there like, did I break anything? Like, do I need to call 911?
Mm-hmm.
And she was just, like, instantly, like, let's get you patched up. Let's get you fixed up. Like, when she saw my hand, like, flushed it out three times. And then she made me do all of these, like, exercises of, like, squeezing her fingers.
Okay, so she, like, did an exam on you and, like, checked to see if you had movement, like, to make sure you didn't break it. Yay.
Yeah, and was, like, double check my pinky, and she's like, if you cannot move it any, like, more than this angle right here tomorrow, you immediately need to go to your doctor or the ER, because it's fractured. So, she was really cool, really awesome. Shout out, I don't want to say her name. Even though, I guess I can say her name. Her name was Hannah. She was really awesome. And I'm very appreciative of her kindness.
Yay, I love Dr. Hannah.
She's the best. She's the best.
I hope she has like a very, like one of those good storylines in a and in an ER doctor drama.
And I hope that karma pays her back wonderfully in some way for being very kind. But anyway, how was your week? What are you up to? You have snapped some awesome photos lately of some good food and some beautiful views.
Yeah, so I'm out here doing the Colorado shit again. my good friend Will came to visit, and a visitor is always a reason to have a good time. So we did some hiking, did the Seven Falls, which is seven waterfalls that are like stacked on each other. And it's super cool. It's a part of the Broadmoor, which is kind of weird that a hotel keeps this natural beauty around. They put like $12 million into it to like make sure it, because like there was like a really bad flood in like some year. They told me a year. It's like 2010 or 2013 that like destroyed Seven Falls, and so the Broadmoor restored it so people can enjoy it. And you like climb up 250 something steps to like see it, and then you get to go hiking up there and see other cool stuff like all of Colorado Springs. And it was hard. I hated the stairs. We did two. We did more stairs than we needed to, because there's like two places you can go to like look up to like see the falls, and one is just like an observation point. And with that one, you could take an elevator or you can take the stairs. We went up the stairs, figured out where the fuck we were, and we were like, oh, we did all of that for nothing. I mean, like, it was beautiful, but it was an additional 140 stairs.
Oh man.
No one wanted that. So yeah, my butt is sore today, but hey, actually my knee is the most sore because of all the stairs.
I bet.
And then we like did more climbing up a mountain from there to see more cool stuff. And people were out there in just sandals. And I was like, how are you doing this? Who tricked you? Who lied to you about where you were going today? Like,
I just imagine all the stubbed toes.
Right?
Yikes.
It would be terrible.
What do? You wear sneakers?
I wore sneakers this time. But I also have a pair of hiking boots that I love. I like to wear the most. It's just been in the summer, they get a little too hot.
Gotcha.
And the numbness of my feet. I was like, I feel like that might be like too much padding between me and the earth. But my feet are like not that numb anymore. So it's like, let's go get in the boots. Let's go on real hikes. Like, I'm so happy. And like comparing it from the hike I did a couple of weeks ago. Did I tell you about my bad hike?
I think you told me only a little bit.
Like, we went on this hike. We used all trails, and it didn't, and it said that it was a moderate hike.
Oh, yeah.
I was, like, bouldering on stuff.
Yeah.
And by the end, I was so mad. And so, like, this last one, like, it wasn't as difficult by no means, but, like, there were things that I would have been really cautious of because of the, like, the balance effects that some of my MS symptoms give me, and I was not thinking in that way at all. I was just out there doing it. Not afraid of falling over. Cause I don't feel as off balance. Like, I feel more centered with the earth more than I felt in, you know, 6 weeks.
Yay.
Woo, woo, woo. Yeah, hiking and amazing Korean food.
Rogue.
we got so much food. It was ridiculous, and all of it was good. And they gave you so many sides to go with it. So you got your kimchi's and, oh, we're going to have like a kimchi style cucumbers, and then these other like really tasty milder cucumbers, and then like this weird carrot-y thing, and then I don't even know what this is. I think it's like a shredded radish. That's dope. It was just, there's even like a coleslaw. Try that. Like,
I can't wait.
So was good.
Was it barbecue or was it just a spot?
It was just a spot. Like, it was like not the full barbecue at all, but everything that you would want to eat. I got this really good fish. We had these great noodles. We had all of it. Just all of it. Too much food.
Gosh, I can't wait.
And we ate it all.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
I'm so got excited. Korean TV playing at the same time. So you're just having a great time.
Woo!
Seeing like K-pop stars in the wild. That's what, like, that's one of the shows.
When they go to the jungle, yeah.
Yeah,
I know
that
exactly
was crazy.
What you're talking about.
No.
Woo!
Full cultural experience.
I can't wait. Who picked it?
What?
Who picked
the place?
Yeah.
Me.
I'm salty.
Why are you salty?
Will got to experience the delicious Korean food before I did. That jerk.
I mean, we've sort of made that a tradition of us.
Yeah.
Of the three of us. You should have came with.
I think I booked my trip before he did.
All I know is that one day he was like, I am going to be there for work and want to extend my trip. So I don't know the date of that.
Well, anyway, I'm going to eat more than him.
Well, we'll get the fried chicken too. We didn't get that.
Why?
I saved that for you.
Yeah. Get you a friend like that.
Alrighty.
All right.
Want to talk about stuff? Going to the John?
Yeah, let's go to the John and talk about stuff.
So, unless you've been living under a rock, you probably have heard something about what's been happening on ESPN. So, Jemila Hill, who's a commentator and host on ESPN, was using her free speech and was making... made some comments about 45, comments that we've all have had, including that Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists. I mean, that's not even an opinion. That's just a fact, right? You know, just calling out the news one day.
Reporting, as
yeah, reporting.
She's supposed to
yeah.
do.
Reporting on life, just reporting on the state of the world. And Trump got upset, and the Trumpers, the trumping thumpers for Trump people, they got upset, and all hell has broken loose. A lot of different things have happened, but first, Trump went on and said, ESPN is paying a real big price for its politics and bad programming. People are dumping it in record numbers. Apologize for untruth. So this is the president of the United States. Like, I think we forget that fact sometimes because he acts like a child. He's acting like, you know, Trump of The Apprentice, you know, but whatever, is saying that a citizen should not say anything bad about him. And here we go. So, one, well, it's a lie. I mean, ESPN, people are still watching ESPN. People still want their sports center. But people have, I mean, ESPN tried to take Jemila off of the air. Tried to do it, and her co-hosts said no. Then they tried to replace the both of them with two other black commentators. And then they said, no, I will not be going on the air for this cause. No, 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 no. So all in support, all in solidarity. So she still had to, she still went on to her show. But yeah, here we are. And there's a lot of just like out. Lots of people are upset about it.
Yeah, I mean, everyone, like white supremacists, love Donald Trump. Like, everyone calls, everyone knows he's a white supremacist. I'm confused. Like, is ESPN not, are they unaware? Like, what have they been doing?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's also this like question of like, do sports, can you separate sports and politics? Like, a lot of people have been saying that like she should be sticking it to sports only. She shouldn't be talking about other things. I mean,
people say that about celebrities too. Like, yeah, they don't, like the law has no effect on them, or nothing in the world has an effect on them or their lives or the lives of all human beings or their own family or...
But I feel like a celebrity can get a little bit more leeway than a sports star, especially when they play on a team or... I mean, I just sports in general. I mean, and that's why it's such a big deal that Colin Kaepernick has done all the things that he did. That's why for so many years... Muhammad Ali was considered controversial, but now every sports, anyone that claims to be a sports fan will call Muhammad Ali the GOAT, but their great grandfather might have had different words for him. You know, or grandfather or and father. It wasn't
greatest of all time.
You know, exactly. So, and like, but using that platform, it also just goes to like black people being told to not talk about racism at all, like, or any of those things, that is a, or black people that have any privilege not being told not to say anything about these things because we're not truly, like, because if you have any privilege, as it be money or, you know, some type of safety, then you aren't even real. What are you complaining about? It goes to, like, it's just the same white supremacist know your place and word in a different package. This time it's around sports. And, you know, black women saying anything about 45 is a problem. I mean, look at the terrible, nonsensical things they say about Auntie Maxine.
Yeah, I mean... I think she should be allowed to comment on whatever she wants, which includes the news, which includes the president, and he's a white supremacist. I guess I don't see the big deal, because when I read that, I'm just kind of like, yeah, yep. And the sky is blue, and grass is green, and... strawberries are sweet and clouds are white from the earth and like,
yeah, she did not say a lie. She did exactly. Not tweet a lie. And she tweeted it again. Like, we have to remember that it's her personal Twitter, not her ESPN. Like, she wasn't on at ESPN and said that. She wasn't on the air and said that. She did it on, it's her own right, her own personal right to free speech or whatever. Like, yeah. She can say this. And then, but what's crazy, because this is where the free speech problem like comes in. Like, you're allowed to say whatever you want and not have your government come at you. So when you have that Sarah Huckabee Sanders during a official White House press, you know, their what's it called? Press.
Press conference?
Yeah. Duh. I can't, like, I'm just like, that was just like, yeah. At a official press conference, you know, seal, White House seal, you know, white, you know, www.whitehouse.com, like, on, like, in front of it. Like, real ass thing, saying that she should be fired, and that's a fireable offense. That's a problem. That is going against everything that America, like, the everything that America's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, that is an overreach.
I mean, white supremacists get to say whatever they want on TV, so.
And their government doesn't condemn them.
Nope.
Doesn't say that all of them should be fired. Like, what?
It's just another day.
So, I mean, Jemila Hill is going to be on ESPN for a while. I don't see this. Or she'll end up leaving. I hope. The thing that I'm afraid of is she'll end up resigning or something stupid. Because it gets bad. Like I would understand if, like, I would leave ESPN if, you know, my personal well-being was threatened in some way, or, you know, but then also find another platform, but also keep my platform someplace else.
Absolutely. Maybe someone else will pick her up if she decides to leave.
Yeah. Someone would. We need a black sports channel.
Yeah, you recruit all.
I mean, black make people up 85% of the most of the leagues, right? So yeah.
You just said that a lot nicer than I did.
Like, we dominate the sports. Why not have our own
channel?
Sports comment, yeah, because, you know, especially talk about the real. You could talk about some of the real issues that are happening to our communities from sports. You know, put the actual organizations on blast. These, you know, white held organizations.
What a nice thought.
Oh, I'm actually like, there must be a podcast. Someone needs to put me on, like, the good sports podcast. Like, I mean, I don't really care about sports, but I'd probably be more interested in sports if there was a an examination of it through a racial lens.
I would listen to that.
Yeah. So if someone's not making it, do it. You have at least two listeners. Like,
here we are. I don't care about sports anymore, but I'll listen to that.
Mm-hmm. I would share that with my family, my sports loving family. They would have a place to talk about sports around.
Woo. Well, shall we move on?
Yes, let's please move on. Yeah, so this is like a story that just like popped through my newsfeed, and I was shocked and appalled. But also, of course.
I was gonna say, where are you?
I mean, but like, just the height that this person, and then like just the blatantness of this, of the offense is just, okay. So, you know, places have poet laureates, like the United States and Philadelphia. Canada has a poet laureate. Well, the former poet laureate, Pierre de Rousseau, is what I'm going to say is the name. Pulled like the biggest Taylor Swift Kardashian heist of poetry ever. So all of his poems, a good chunk of his poems are just translations of Maya Angelou and Tupac.
Stop.
Just like straight, just, I'm gonna put this shit in French. Now it's mine.
I can't even read this anymore.
All right, I'm gonna look. This is, I'm just gonna read one of these.
Please.
One of these, right? So, this is the Google Translate of I Rise by Desiree, or De Rousseau, or whatever. You can wipe me from the pages of history.
Oh, stop.
With your twisted falsehoods.
You didn't have
you
to
You can jag me
life.
Through the mud, but like the wind, I rise. And for you guys that might not know this, like, B just heard it and like was like, that is just I rise. You may write me down in history with your bitter, twisted lies.
Oh, that's
you
verbatim.
May trod me in the very dirt, but still, like dust, I rise.
That is verbatim. He's verbatim.
Yeah.
Oh my. And whoever, who gave him that award?
Like white people, white literature embraced him. The gatekeepers of literature embraced him, of poetry, and like, he was poet laureate.
Like the
you don't
leader
just wake
of
up
poets.
That. Like.
Oh my God.
Crazy town. So yeah, that was just like, if you don't understand white privilege yet, you like you don't want like that. This is an example that I hope you get it. That you can just steal and be applauded.
I like, who is giving an award of poet laureate who does not know the words of Maya Angelou?
But it was in French.
So?
I don't.
Didn't they have to translate it for them to know that they liked it in French? Or don't they speak French? What part of Canada are they from? Are there French Canadians on this panel or group of people? I mean, a lot of people in Canada speak French. So,
I mean, if my high school had a $1,000 software that they would run everyone's papers through for plagiarism. They don't do this for poet laureates? Like,
come on.
They wanted to make sure that I didn't, they wanted to make sure that I didn't plagiarize on my first 10-page paper. Like,
they checked my thesis.
They which, check everything.
Which is like way over 50 pages.
No problem.
Crazy. Asinine. Insane. White people. At it again. This
back
just in. White people are on the same shit.
And no, but like, what's crazy is that we're only, we're finding out about, this is the kicker. After this dude is dead. So, never has to face the consequences of what he did.
What a life.
A plus job. You won the White Privilege Award. You won the Cultural Appropriation Grand Prize. You are gold medal. 10, 10, 10. Like, all of it. Like, I have, it's just so stupid you have to laugh. Like, it's so sad. But whatever. Like, at least he's dead.
Thank God.
At least there'll be an asterisk now.
Stealer of poems. Dumpster fire of words.
You know what? He's going to be infamous now. He would probably have just been like on a listicle of poet laureates, Canadian poet laureates. Like, who's a damn about that? But now he's the infamous cultural appropriator, Pierre.
Poet Stoliet. Embarrassing.
Oh my gosh. Bye, Pierre.
Goodbye, Pia.
Is there anything else to talk about?
No, I think I've been in my own bubble this past week. / I had an event almost every night this week, so I actually am like just now catching up on what's going on in the world because I wasn't getting home till like 8 or 9 every night.
Okay. Well, the Emmys are tonight.
Oh, yes.
So we won't talk too much about that. We'll talk about who won, lost, and who wore it best next week, probably. But I'm happy. There's a lot of brown people up for stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll celebrate next week on who won and, you know, whose melanin was popping.
Popping. It's popping. It's popping. I found myself watching a Lil Mama interview the other day on YouTube. It was strange. I was just like, what are you doing, girl? What are you doing with your life? What you up to?
What does Lil Mama do?
She's rapping about sausage still, I think. It's not actual sausage.
Oh, okay. Penis.
Yeah.
All right. I get it. I have a at least a middle school level sense of humor, so.
All right. So that's the John then, I guess.
Woot. John. So this week for You Better Work, instead of, you know, some inspirational words of wisdom like I always do, I thought it would be really cool to talk to someone else. So today I did a little interview with Christine Michelle Carter. She is a strategic marketer. And mother, and writes a lot about millennial motherhood and what it means to be a mother now and how and who mothers are as influencers in society and for business. We had a really interesting conversation about 45 and what it means to be a millennial and the alpha generation, who are the children of millennials, and what they're into. So it was fun. I hope you guys enjoy. Okay. Hi. So I'm here today with Christine Carter. Christine, I actually, instead of me doing a full intro about you, I want you to introduce yourself.
Not a problem. Hi, everybody. I am Christine Michelle Carter. I am a global marketing strategist by day and a contributor to Forbes and Huffington Post and Health as well, as well as another number of other publications, but those are the primaries. By night, I am the mom to a 6-year-old girl named Maya Natalie and a 2-year-old boy named West Kyle. I've been married for nearly 8 years now to my wonderful husband, James. and I am very excited to be on the Black Girls Laughing podcast.
We are so happy to have you. It's just it's just one of the Black girls today. Well, first I want to know, what's a global marketing strategist? How do you define that?
Sure. So a global marketing strategist is someone who is typically part of a corporate strategy and development team for an organization. That is the department that I am in. And it can be a variety of things as long as it's related to the long-term strategy and priorities of a company. So it could be investigating competitors. It could be identifying white space opportunities for the company, looking at the future of the category that the company is in, looking at the future of markets that a company could be interested in. No 2 days are alike.
Okay. That sounds fun. How did you get yourself into this?
Sure. So I, long story, probably even longer, 10 years ago, I started a retail marketing firm. And I was working with small mom and pop retailers, but the idea of my company was to be a one-stop full-service boutique for them. And that included providing them with strategies to grow their business outside of being in the mom and pop kind of niche category that they were in. So I got experience with strategy then, and I ended up leaving entrepreneurship and working for another company, and I helped them with innovation and marketing and starting up. There was a global company, ended up helping them start it up at a local level in the Baltimore market where I'm from. So that also required me to have a little bit of strategy in the role. And then I ended up coming to the company I'm with now.
Okay, great. How was that transition from entrepreneurship back into a company? We talk a lot about wanting to make the transition away from having our 9-to-5s to being an entrepreneur, right. And so I'm definitely interested in the reverse.
Well, you know, it wasn't hard for me because the role that I'm in, anytime you are in a corporate strategy and development role, because no 2 days are alike, it does require you to be an independent thinker, be very nimble. So it's very similar to entrepreneurship. You are in charge of the recommendations that you're giving to executive leaders and other stakeholders within a company. So it's very, very similar to entrepreneurship. It wasn't that hard a leap for me. I think that for everyone who's listening, as long as they're in a role that is very similar to that, that does allow them to have a little bit of autonomy and not just sit behind a desk 9-to-5, then the transition from entrepreneurship back into the corporate world isn't that hard. And you know, this may not be the end stop for me. I might transition right back out. You know, who knows? But it's the transition from entrepreneurship back into the corporate world wasn't that difficult for me.
Okay. I mean, I'm a believer that once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur, and people have that gene, right. I hear a lot about. And if you don't have that want for autonomy, I feel it's something that is huge with millennials in the workplace, wanting to be able to have their ownership, their little cut of land inside of a company. And some companies are very much open to that, and then there's others that are not.
Right.
So you found yourself in a place where you can still be who you are, but be inside of a corporate structure. That is great. I'm not as lucky. Okay. So you are also a mother.
I am.
I just want to be like, how's it going? But how's it going?
Well, you know, I'm hanging in there. No. it's challenging to be a mom and be a millennial mom and to have young children in this day and age. I'm sure there are other listeners who can relate. Millennials right now the largest generation in the workforce. There are more millennial women working than other generations. So there are a lot of mothers out there, 9,000 babies born to millennials every day. So there are a lot of moms out there who understand what I'm going through and the challenges of working and the challenges of trying to raise small children and the challenges of raising small children in an era where things like, where hashtags for people being killed for police brutality exist or cyberbullying exists. These are things that other generations may have had to deal with on a different sort of twisted scale, but not to the scale that we have to deal with. So it's challenging. And like I said, I'm hanging in there. But on the flip side of that, it's a blessing and it's a joy to be a mother because you get to experience childhood again through your children's eyes.
Yeah. The thing that I know that I'm the most worried about when I think about my future children is social media.
Yeah.
You know, when I was getting out of high school, Facebook was just coming onto the scene, and in the past, 10, 11 years, mm-hmm. it's so ubiquitous in everyone's lives, and there's so many young people that are using social media between, Snapchat and other apps that I don't even know about because I'm not young enough to use them. How do you use social media and technology with your kids, and how do you think you're going to restrict or police social media use as they grow up?
Well, my daughter is very aware of what Instagram is and what Facebook is and the fact that her family and friends are on it. She understands that she is too young to have an account, but she knows that is a way for family and friends to stay connected with one another. With regards to other mediums, I do let her watch YouTube videos about kids playing with toys or kids cooking and baking. I do let her watch Netflix, but all of those have parental controls, which helped mm-hmm. me out a great deal. I once saw a meme and it said, "Shout out to Netflix for being a better parent than I am." And it's the truth because the parental controls are pretty great.
That's great.
So I do allow her to be, engulfed in those mediums because, quite frankly, I would be doing her a disservice if I told her, get off the computer, get off the internet. Mm-hmm. Why? The rest of her generation is on it. They're very technologically savvy. I think that I would be really putting her behind the times if I told her she could only go play outside. I mean, that's just not the world we live in anymore. Mm-hmm. As far as policing, and I am concerned about when she sees images if I'm on my phone and I happen to be looking through my Instagram feed and there's always somebody who's in a sexy pose, or mm-hmm. if we're watching a television show, even on Nick Jr., just today, there was a commercial of women dancing sexy, and it was on Nick Jr. It's, you can't escape
wow.
it. So I do have to have the conversation about, duck face is not what young ladies do, and posing this way and posing that way is not what young ladies do, and dancing a certain way is not what young ladies do. So while Netflix and other avenues do help with the parental controls, it's still important for me to step in and tell her what it means to be a woman in this day and age.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Do you, you definitely share pictures of your children online? Because I know there's a little bit of
yes.
a debate of that. There's, okay. But no, your child doesn't have their own account. What's your opinions on kids that have their own Instagram that
and I'm very aware of that because my daughter wants to be an actress by day and a police officer in the evening, she's told me.
Okay.
So she is into acting, and I have had folks reach out to me through my social accounts, corporations interested in having her endorse a product. And it's funny because I have to have an adult conversation with her and say, is this something that you would actually use? Is this something that you're interested in? Do you want to take a picture with this? And she'll say yes or no. But I feel like with some of those Instagram accounts, with the children, I don't know, and I'm sure the rest of the audience who sees these photos don't know, if those kids are really cognizant of their images being online and how comfortable they are with posing all the time to make those mm-hmm. images, or if it's the parents pushing it. And I try not to post images of my daughter unless she knows I'm posting it, because it is important for her to have her own individuality and her own voice, even at 6 years old, to me.
Yeah, I think she has a right to her own image. And
right.
But I feel like a lot of parents don't see it that way. Yeah. Sometimes it feels to me, as I look at some of these Instagram accounts, that they, you know, they're commodifying their child.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they're getting these great sponsorships and they're getting all these cute clothes and things, but what is the effect to the child? And especially when I also think about the parents that embarrass their kids online.
Yeah.
That, like, put, you know, they reprimand their children online and display that for the world to see. And what is that going to do to the kid once they have their own accounts and start building their own identity and brand, since we're all brands now online? Right. What is that going to do to them in the future, or how is it going to affect them?
Which I think is just awful, because what they're going to do is look back on their life online and see the kind of interaction or the relationship that they had with their parent, and it mm-hmm. may not be positive, and that's so unfortunate. And that's mm-hmm. also the view that they'll have, but family and friends as well, and that's sad too. I think with my children, I don't reprimand them. I may tease them or joke about something they've done, which is very typical of millennial moms for us to do, but it's nothing that I wouldn't say to them, and it's nothing that they don't laugh at themselves. The other thing is, with any products that I present to my daughter, again, I have to make sure it's something that she would actually want to use or something that she likes. And the same thing with the products that I may recommend for folks on my Instagram account. I get no money from recommending any products. It's something that I would do because I would support the brand whether they came to me or not.
Mm-hmm. That's great. All right. So, who is Generation Alpha?
So, Generation Alpha they're my kids' generation. It's anybody born after the year 2010, so 7-year-olds and older. They are, like I said, a very technologically savvy generation. I believe the number one tech item Christmas gift from Amazon last year was a soft kind of rubber, brightly colored iPad case for kids. That's how often these kids are using technology. They have turned kids their age or just a little bit older into entrepreneurs who make upwards of 6 figures, because these kids are watching each other play with toys online on YouTube videos or cook items and bake. It's insane how smart these kids are to just be 7 and under.
Can you remember the first time you handed your child an iPad or a tablet and what they did with it? And
yes, I can, because my son is 2, it's easier for me to remember when I handed it to him. But because he has an older 6-year-old sister, the first time I handed him one, he immediately started to just touch on it with his pointer finger. It wasn't like he was trying to lick it. He wasn't trying to bang it against his head. He knew exactly what the iPad did and how he was supposed to interact with it, which I think is just phenomenal.
That is amazing.
And scary.
Yes. They're watching it. They're watching you all the
right.
time, and they know
they
that
are.
They see that shiny thing in my pointer finger. It does something. Let me try.
Right.
That's amazing. So we kind of already touched upon this, but we talk a lot about 45. We have a little segment called Anxiety Corner, where we put all of our anxieties about President 45 in a little box, and we just talk about it for 2 minutes, and then we sort of like walk away.
Okay.
I've been really concerned about this new generation. This is their first president that they're going to probably have some memories of, depending on how long 45 stays in office, but potentially, you know, there will be plenty of memories of 45 for your 6-year-old and your 2-year-old. What are you teaching your own children about 45?
Nothing. I'm teaching, yes, and I am, to my detriment, I am as honest a person on podcasts as I am in my house, just at a cookout. So I am teaching my children nothing about 45. My daughter in kindergarten learned about the election, and she's very aware that Donald Trump is the president. But looking back on even when I was her age, and I believe Bush was in office, and then Clinton became in office. When Clinton became in office, I wasn't fascinated by him. I wasn't interested in him, but I was very fascinated in Hillary. And I read books about her, and that encouraged me to read books about other female leaders through history of all different races. So I think that... And I think that was because I grew up in a house full of confident black women. So I say that to say, I don't think that my daughter, needs to know anything about Trump. She needs me to be a role model for her. And the qualities and the attributes that I exude are things that are going to interest her about the president's for years to come, for when she's a little bit older and can really grasp what being a president is. So there may be, after Trump, another Democrat, or even better, another Obama, who inspires her to learn more about black history and learn more about, just learn more about law and politics. It won't be necessarily about the president himself. It could be about his family, like it was for Clinton with me. Who knows? But I don't really see it in this time, the Trump being important to teach my daughter about.
But what about, I feel like a lot of the racist rhetoric that is coming out of the White House is spilling into playgrounds. I've seen some articles and some incidents being shared of, you know, children being racially biased towards each other. Just mimicking what they're hearing and what they're seeing on television.
No, they're not mimicking what they're hearing and seeing on television. They're mimicking what they're hearing and seeing in their household.
Yeah. Okay, and well, that's the true problem.
Yeah.
How do you decide parents, like when it comes to the play date, how do you make the decision about a parent and child duo that you're going to pursue for a play date?
I'm an introvert, and I've written about this for Forbes. So I, in the past, have never pursued a play date for my child.
Okay.
It's usually the other parents who, I'm very standoffish with the parents because I'm a very busy woman. Mm-hmm. And when I am doing pickup and drop off and I'm in and out the door, I really don't converse with parents like that. But the parents, you know, God bless them, the ones, and they have been from all races, have always been warm and welcoming to me. And my daughter is a very inclusive girl. So she can make friends with anybody. I mean, she just has an outgoing personality. So I often find moms coming up to me and asking to do play dates. So I really don't exclude anybody from a play date or you know, make up an excuse as to why I can't. I'm always open to whoever's parents, whoever my daughter is playing with their parents.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm just so fascinated with that because I know that I'm wary of most people now, especially knowing some facts and figures about who voted for 45. I constantly think about that, you know, 54% of white women voting for voting for Trump makes me, you know, just a little cautious. And I feel like it would be the same type of cautious when meeting parents and deciding if that's a household that I would want my child to go to. You know, just being afraid of what they'll end up hearing or, you know, learning through, you know, just through that interaction.
You have to give your children more credit than your future children more credit than you do. You're raising them in a good household. They'll be confident. Even at 6 years old, even my daughter now at this age knows right from wrong. She knows what's appropriate to say about people. She knows what's inappropriate and shouldn't be said to her. And we have a good relationship, and she would communicate if something inappropriate was said to her. And then another point to that is I have friends who probably voted for Trump, didn't say it to me. You know, we all do. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't change the fact that they're my friends, and it doesn't change the fact that they're still interested in my culture and who I am as a person. They aren't prejudiced towards me. They just happen to vote for Trump. That was their decision. So I'm very leery, and I'm very sensitive to saying, oh, this person lives in a Trump household. I don't know if I want my daughter to go around that person. Or, oh, I've heard this kid make certain comments. I don't know that I would just 100% write that kid off. Maybe, yes, my daughter wouldn't go over their house, but I don't want her to not have that as a friend, that kid.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, I told that. That makes sense. And I think that's something that comes from motherhood.
Yeah.
Being a little bit more open to folks. Is that I know that I catch myself always having you know, if 45 is just like a sore subject for me, and if I find out that someone voted for 45, it definitely changes my perception of them.
Honey, 45 is a sore subject for me, and I got dragged through the mud, okay, on more articles than one. So for me to stay open-minded, like it's a big deal, but I stay open-minded about it.
All right, I hope that I can become as mature as you someday.
I know you were raised to be mature. You raised.
Yes, I was definitely raised to be mature, and I'm like it just seems like something happened with 45 that has just been like the stopping point for my compassion towards people who make decisions that are against my best interests.
Yeah, I hear
and,
you.
You know,
because prior to 45, I mean, there was a lot of police brutality. Like I said, I live in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. I live where the Freddie Gray incident happened.
Yeah.
So for you to say that, I completely sympathize. I understand completely where you're coming from. But I think motherhood is going to, you have to have faith. Motherhood makes you have faith in humanity and faith in God like you wouldn't believe. So, you know, 5-10 years from now, I want to hear your opinion on this.
All right, we'll see. Okay, I just have one more question in terms of motherhood and millennial motherhood. What makes millennial mothers different from their mothers?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, you know, people think that millennials are self-absorbed, and it's not necessarily coming from a place of conceit, but it's coming from a place of almost like you just said, being fed up with representation. And that's not just for Black millennials, that's for millennial women. We're sick of being misrepresented in the workforce, Black millennials being sick of being misrepresented as people, just in society. So just millennials overall are self-absorbed, but it's because we're demanding that our world reflect us in a positive way and reflect us in all facets. We are a very culturally diverse generation, more so than Generation X, who would be some of our parents, more so than baby boomers for sure. So as mothers, we're just, again, from cyberbullying to social media, we're just dealing with different things than our parents had to deal with. We're more similar, in my opinion, and I wrote a article about this for the Huffington Post, to the silent generation than we are to Generation X or to baby boomers. I think because they had radical change in their life, like we've had radical change with technology. I think that that's probably one of the bigger ways that we're different from a Generation X or a baby boomer mom. We're just dealing with a lot more stresses, a lot more stresses in our lives.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even have kids and I can't deal with my stresses. I could not even imagine having little eyes and a little mouth looking at me. Okay. That is just so interesting that you're saying that we're similar to the silent generation. Yeah. And I don't even really know anything about the silent generation to pick at that, you know? We don't talk about them. And we definitely don't look into our past enough to see the similarities. There's so much comparison between millennials and baby boomers. And I think that's the misnomer. And I know millennials, I know my biggest, the people that I have the biggest fight with right now in this world are baby boomers. Of course.
Like it's the... Well, because that has a little bit to do with market research and the popularity in recent years. And I say recent years, I want to say the past 10, 15 years in market research, when people really started to pay attention to the generations, and the information about the generations became widespread. And back then, they were the largest generation to date. And everybody was interested in baby boomers. Oh, they're so affluent. Oh, they're influencing other generations, their kids. And oh, they can bring so much money to the economy. Yeah, well, they could. But the idea is for each generation to get a little bit bigger and a little bit better and a little bit smarter. And that's what happened. And who likes to be the old person in the room? No one. So that's the problem with the baby boomers right now, is that they're aging and in some cases not gracefully.
Mm-hmm. Don't know when to go away. Right.
Give us those upper level positions.
I mean, I literally at my last job had my baby boomer president say to me that she is in my way for everything that I want to do. That's funny. And I was like, okay, how about you just get out the way then? Why are we even talking about this?
Right. And that's why these large companies really aren't innovating, because they kind of have these stagnant employees who are collecting a check and really aren't there like millennials would be, with our greatest attributes, which is just really transparency and innovation and wanting to make a difference, and mm-hmm. our thirst and our hunger. And baby boomers don't have that. You know, they don't.
No. They've done it. They're here.
Right.
Yeah.
So in 30 minutes, I've managed to alienate Trump supporters, baby boomers. Mm-hmm. Let's just go down the list, why don't we?
But you've inspired potential mothers.
Oh, that's great.
So I want to just do a couple of quick little questions.
Okay.
First one, what makes you laugh?
When my children are laughing.
Of course.
Yeah.
What's your drink of choice?
A club soda or ginger beer.
Oh.
Yeah, ginger beer. Let's go with that. Yeah.
I love a good ginger beer. I actually just bought a terrible ginger beer that was too sweet and not gingery enough. I wanted to go to the... It was like, it's artisanal, small batch. I wanted to throw that batch in their face.
I went to a restaurant once, ordered a ginger beer. I said, now this is non-alcoholic, right? And she said, oh yeah. I gave it to my son was one at the time. He took a swig of it and I was like, Why is he loopy and acting funny? And I drank it and I was pissed. Pissed.
Oh.
Like, you fool.
No.
Ginger beer is non-alcoholic.
And, oh no, that's the
shot. So I've gotten my child. Oh,
that waitress needs to be fired.
Right.
What's your favorite Beyonce song?
Oh my God, don't you do that. There's no such thing. Everything puts out is the gold that King Midas wore on his body. There's no choosing one Beyonce song. Oh my God. No, I won't do that.
Okay, well, what's your favorite... Like, what's your favorite deep cut of Beyonce?
I honestly, it's like, you might as well say, pick your favorite child. I can't. I thought, you can tell from my Instagram feed, I'm obsessed with Beyonce. I could not choose just one song. I won't do that.
Album?
Album would be, that's hard too. I'm going to say... two albums, and it's because I've been a fan of her since 1997 when I was in middle school. I never answer a question short. When I was 1997, I was in middle school, and Teen People was the first national magazine to run an article about her. And when they said her name, they had to say in parentheses, "sounds like fiance," because nobody could pronounce her name. But I've been a fan that long, and when I became a mother and a wife, and she made four, I was very frustrated with the fact that she was not telling the authentic story of being a wife and a mother. So when she finally made Beyonce and then made Lemonade, I was like, thank you. You're now living in your truth. Mm-hmm. And I felt like she was being very commercial for so long. Mm-hmm. So those are my favorites, because that's when she became authentic to me.
Yeah, that was a rebirth. I feel like she's had two rebirths, you know, the transition from Destiny's Child to her solo career, and then this transition from four to Beyonce is just a completely different sound, right, and energy to the music that she is making. Yeah. And she takes so much more ownership too. It just transformed her. I'm an old Beyonce fan as well. I was born in Houston.
Oh, okay.
So I knew about Destiny's Child before everyone knew about Destiny's Child. I was in the youth games when I was 9, and it was in Houston, and for the opening ceremonies, Destiny's Child, brand new artists, performed. And I was like, I know all these songs. This is the best.
That's so funny.
Anyways. The final question is, if you could tell your 18-year-old self one sentence of advice, mm-hmm, what would it be?
My friend has a podcast. She asked me the same question, and it wouldn't change. And it would be, you're doing everything right, so continue to do what you're doing. And that is the sentence that I would give to myself, because at 18 years old, I went to, I had graduated a couple years prior from high school, but it was an all-girls high school. And there, being surrounded by girls, it was supposed to give us a lot more confidence and make us a lot more reassured of the women we were becoming. But we constantly compared ourselves to one another. This person has a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. This person doesn't. This person's already having sex. This person isn't. This person has long hair. This person's hair looks different from mine. This person's taller than me. This person's lighter than me. This person's darker than me. And those thoughts would fill my head, and it made me feel like I wasn't sure that I was on the right path or I was doing what I should be doing. So the advice that I would give to myself is, you were concerned about the right things at the right time. And to keep doing what you were doing.
I love it. I love it. I wrote it down. Well, this has been great, Christine.
Oh,
such great words of wisdom. Love to have you back to talk more, and so we can delve deeper into these issues. And I also am just interested in you. you the career woman, especially when it comes to just being able to promote yourself. That's something that I know we really care about, and our audience cares about as well. So I'll be emailing you.
Okay, I would love to come back.
Yay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Brittany.
Is there anything you would... How can our audience find you?
Sure. They can find me on Instagram at C. Michelle Carter, C-M-I-C-H-E-L-C-A-R-T-E-R. And my Twitter handle is the same, at C. Michelle Carter. And they can visit my website, ChristineMichelleCarter.com.
Perfect. Thank you, Christine.
Thanks, Brittany.
Hey guys, so I've got the throwback jam for this week, and I read this article. It was like this funny little interview with someone, and they were talking about how they still make CDs, like mixed CDs of songs they love, which if I didn't have the laptop I had, I probably would do too, because I love making playlists and making mixes of songs that just go well together or sound, you know, aesthetically pleasing to my ear at the same time, or as you know with our throwback jam, is like reminds me of being a teenager or childhood or anything like that. And it made me think of some of the mix CDs that I made in high school and when I was younger. And the song popped in my head. It's not that old at all. It's not even a decade old yet. So I'm kind of breaking the rules, but I distinctly remember making multiple mix CDs with this song, and it pays homage to a time where we were trying to bring girl groups back in a different way. They weren't as successful as, say, your Fifth Harmony or anyone like that, but we watched them come together. We watched their journey becoming a band. We watched Diddy coach them through.
Yay.
And they became showstoppers. We showstopping. We showstoppers.
Oh, my God, I love that. We in the club.
Make sure that they no, what is it? So when you see us rocking, we call it showstopping.
Good song.
So that is my throwback jam for this week. I'm probably going to listen to it again after we record, because I listened to it when I was doing laundry today and I was like, wow, I still remember every single word. And that song was a banger.
It was. They had a lot of bangers.
They did. I'm like,
for such a short career.
Why did y'all flop so hard?
Personalities.
Yeah. It didn't work.
Yeah, it just didn't. Where could we watch reruns of Making the Band?
Probably YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah, YouTube's got everything.
I'm going to go look that up, because that's something that I would want to see.
Well, now they have that new show with Timbaland or whatever that's making, like I'm making the band.
Oh, I don't want to watch a new show. I don't care. Like, I'm not of that age to care about the new band that's being made.
I mean, yeah, no one, who's going to be Danity Kane and what was the other group?
I have no idea.
I can picture their faces. And O-Town. I mean, obviously O-Town. Everyone knows O-Town.
Yeah.
You'll be the star of my liquid dreams.
Yeah, ugh, that's the only who wrote one that? I know is it's liquid so. Dreams.
This so disgusting. Such an awful. It's awful.
And we were just singing that in middle school, like, yeah, my liquid jeans, yeah. Who makes a Destiny's Child?
Just a little touch of Madonna's wild style with Janet Jackson's smile.
Throw in a body like Jennifer. You got the start of my liquid dreams.
My liquid dreams. So that is my throwback jam this week. Throwback to Making the Band. Throwback to Sean Puffy Combs. Throwback to Danity Kane and show stopping.
Oh my gosh,
such a good song.
Good song. Oh, I'm just thinking about what was her name? Boom Cat. the choreographer.
Yeah, she was.
Oh my gosh, she was so amazing.
Famous. She worked with everyone. I actually watched this one thing where she was working with K-pop stars, too.
Of course.
I was like, what?
They need to tighten up that choreography sometimes.
But I was just like, wow, being a choreographer, like, once you hit a certain level, must be so cool because everyone from everywhere just wants you. So, like, mm-hmm. What a fun way to see the world.
What a fun way. Through the eyes of pop stars.
Maybe in my second life, I'll be cooler than I am now.
You have a blueprint.
I'll try it again, guys. I'll try it again.
All right. That's the end of the show, right? We're going to Giggle Cackle Roar.
Yeah.
It's time to giggle. It's time to cackle. And it's time to whatever the hell that was.
That was a cackle.
And it's time to roar.
Whatever that was.
You said the word roar, but okay. Oh. Do I even have one?
I have a giggle.
You have a giggle? Well, what's your giggle?
My giggle is something that actually made me giggle, which isn't a sound that I thought that I really made. But I saw it pop up on my Facebook, and I watched it a few times because it just made me laugh. But there's this really short video that's, like, floating around the internet that started from Reddit. Where this guy, relatively unassuming, has his phone out on selfie mode, and it looks like he's about to take a selfie with Tommy Pickles, aka Tommy Toenails, aka Tommy Loren, garbage dumpster fire that she is. And he has it on video, and she smiles in her little hat or whatever, and all of a sudden he just says, "Hey, Tommy, how does it feel to be a racist piece of shit?" And she, like, immediately at the word racist, like, begins to exit the frame because she clearly, I mean, we all know where it's going, but he is so, like, stone cold. You have no idea that this is about to come out of his mouth, and he's just kind of like, "Oh, okay," at the end when she exits the shot, and it makes me giggle. It's quite funny. It's a great way to troll her because she's just such garbage. She's so ready to be, like, cute, and I mean, if you looked at this guy, not to generalize, but to generalize in the way that I am, you would think, of course he would take a photo with, like, a selfie with Tommy, because I guess a lot of people would do that because she's, quote, famous, unquote.
She's famous?
Whatever. She's everywhere. I mean, she's signed on to Fox News now, so.
Oh.
More and more people get to hear her trash. But instead, he asked her how it feels to be a racist piece of shit, and that made me giggle, and it made me happy. Even for but a fleeting moment. Nothing?
I'm, like, trying to think.
No! We don't have to do it the same every week. We're switching it up.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing to giggle or cackle or... You know what? I got something. I want to giggle for acting like you're 21 every once in a while. We've just been drinking and eating a lot this past week, and it's been a good time to be so silly. And I went to the liquor store and acted like I was 21. I was like, I want to try something different, something new. And I tried spiked seltzer.
Oh, that's the best.
It's so good. I only like the grapefruit kind.
Yeah, that's the best flavor.
I got a variety pack and like...
Oh.
Cranberry was not the right choice, but grapefruit's perfect. So it was nice to just not get the same old six pack or, you know, bottle of wine. Mix it up. Get a little, you know, sugar drunk.
I feel that. I actually had Prosecco yesterday, so...
Okay, yeah, you got that sugar drunk. Got that just headache.
Changing it up. Here we are, changing it up.
I'll drink Prosecco if... When the girls want Prosecco.
Yeah. Yesterday I was like, wait, I want... I was like, oh, I'll get a bottle of wine. And then I stood there and I looked at, like, the refrigerated section. I was like, wait, why don't I ever get Prosecco?
My old boss, like my first boss out of college, her motto was always to have two bottles of bubbly in your refrigerator at all time, so you can always be ready to celebrate.
I like that.
And I was doing it for a little bit, so because it made you like celebrate small things too, as well as big things, and it also made celebration more of a commonplace in your life, not just a, you know, every once in a while we celebrate because the calendar says we should, or, you know, something really big happened, you know? You got me thinking I need to start that tradition again. There'll be some bottles of bubbly when you come visit me in October.
Woohoo! Well, we're gonna brunch it up, so I can't wait.
Oh, yes. Let's do some brunch. I don't brunch a lot.
Let's brunch.
I need eggs on toast.
Bees who brunch.
With a sauce. Ooh, yes. That is the album cover.
Ching ching, clink clink, clink 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 clink. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess I can roar that I have pink hair. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, really cool pink hair.
Friday after work was like, I want rose gold, which was what I thought of when I saw it on some other girl in a picture. I was like, I want rose gold hair. And so I went to the salon, the only one that I go to in Philly, and I was like, rose gold hair, I want it. And they were like, okay. And here I am with a cotton candy head now.
Yeah. But it's cool. I like how it looks when it's braided.
Yeah, yeah, that was really cool. So right now it looks kind of stringy because I did a hair mask and I slept with some coconut oil in it to try and, you know, give it some life back.
Mm-hmm.
And in a couple weeks I'll go in for like a deep condition there and probably a touch up to re-strengthen my hair. But she even cut off 2 inches after she did the 2 rounds of peroxide, because I was going in for a haircut anyway, and then when I went in there was when I was like, you know, I've been talking about dyeing my hair a color for a while. I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, no, that's so brave. I could never. Like I'm so afraid of bleach.
So am I, but after I did the mask, I put it in. It's just a Shea Moisture mask. I put it in and I used my diffuser for like 20 minutes and like literally just sat there and like combed it through with the mask still in my hair and rinsed it, and it instantly already felt better.
Okay.
And she said it will start to be better if I don't wash it a lot. And I was like, great. I already don't wash my hair, like, ever. So I'll be good to go.
Alrighty. All right. So we're made to do this.
Seriously. And, like, she did a great job, because anywhere else, I probably would have had to sit through, like, multiple rounds and wouldn't have finished it in one day. And I had to sit through two because my hair is so dark.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, at that point, I have had all hair that I've ever dyed completely cut off. So it is all fresh,
mm-hmm.
I guess, virgin hair. And I only had to sit through two rounds of lightning to get it to be this pink.
Great. I don't know what any of that means.
Well, when your hair is, like, your hair is really dark. So mm-hmm. they have to do the peroxide.
Oh, you light. Said light. You said lightning. Lightning, and I heard lightning, like like a lightning bolt. And
no,
I was like, oh, is that like a name of a procedure? And I was like, is that like a
no?
Never mind.
When they bring it up to the blonde.
Okay. I get that.
But now this is my jumping off point to finally, next time I'm okay with going under the peroxide wand. Having gray hair.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, so that'll happen, I guess, maybe in the next year or so.
I'm just getting naturally gray. It's just, it's like getting bad. Like, to the point where I've been thinking about dyeing my hair to just not have gray
hair?
Because, like, it's either, like, add more gray or...
Get rid of it.
Or get rid of it or something. I'm not liking how, like, I don't know. I'm, like, slowly getting... okay with it, but it just like exploded the amount of grays in the front. Like the front fur, it's got like, I can't hide it in my curls in the way that I was for so long.
Embrace it, go all gray.
I want it. If I could just be gray like my grandmother is, like, and how she was starting about my age, like, that would be cool. But I don't have the gene is not that strong in me.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. Damn, okay. Heinz jeans.
Damn.
They're never going gray, so...
Come on, y'all. Okay, well, that's an episode.
Yeah.
You can find us on the internet, on Twitter, at BLK Girls Laughing with No G. On Facebook, facebook.com/blackgirlslaughing. On our website, blackgirlslaughing.com. You can email us to do an interview like we had today with Brittany. Or to say hello. Or to say you gave us an awesome rating on iTunes. At blackgirlslaughing@gmail.com. And on our personal Instagrams, I'm at B like Bumblebee. Knightly, like knight in shining armor with an L-Y at the end.
And I am Brie, like the cheese, Heinz, like Duncan Hines, throwback, on Twitter and on Instagram.
Yeah. So leave us a review, share, like, leave us stars. Tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your family.
And shout out to our new podcast hosts. We are now with Audio Stack. You might have noticed an advertisement at the top of the show. So yeah, if you are a podcaster like us and you're looking for a place to host your podcast for free, check out Audio Stack. They're pretty great. And they're Black owned. Hey.
Power to the people.
You know?
All right.
All right.
Bye.
Peace.